The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
Hi, this is Scott.
This is Pat.
You're going to be hearing Hanson McLean in just a moment. We've got a great program. We're going to talk a little about the shift that we're seeing in home ownership, why home ownership rates have not crept back up, and why they might not.
And we're also going to talk a little bit about what Wall Street has up its sleeve now to get at your hard-earned money and make more for itself.
Stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are with us today on this fantastic weekend. Both myself and my co-host here. We're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We meet with people like yourself during the week and come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air.
Yes, and if you'd like to join the show, if you have a question about money, estate, taxes, college planning, college, how do I pay for it? It's top of mind for me, actually. Three kids in college now. Never imagined.
Yikes.
Never, ever imagined. Three kids in college.
You imagined, and you had a 529 plan set up.
Oh, I did, actually.
Okay, so
I did. Okay, I did imagine. I planned for it. I didn't know how it would feel when I got there.
You know what I did not plan for?
What's that?
So my son is at back in Boston for college, and the travel, not just for him, but like my wife, we all have to go help him move in.
Yes.
And not, right, he's moving out of a dorm into an apartment. She just likes excuses to go back and visit him.
Yes.
And so there's the travel costs.
And the time.
Yeah.
I did not
budget for the travel costs.
I did anticipate that a little. I did say to my children, when you're picking a college, I would prefer one with a direct flight.
Or just a nice short drive.
A direct flight.
Actually, having them far enough away so they can.
It's kind of nice.
Yeah. Anyway.
So if you'd like to join if you have a question about college funding, tax
you can tell
plan,
what stage of life we're in.
What's on our minds, but you can join the show at 888-2-HANSON. That's 888-242-6766.
And let's start off right with the calls. We're in Rochester with Michael. Michael, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, how are you today?
Wonderful, Michael. Thanks for joining us.
I have a question. Back in December 2014, my father passed away, and there were three incomes in the house. But since he's passed away, it's just two income, me and my mother. She's retired, and he was retired. And so we're getting a lot of credit card debt. We tried to pay off the debt by borrowing from a credit union, but we were denied.
Okay.
So now we're trying to get in the right position of restoring our credit and trying to pay it off.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question is, I have a 403B. That I have money in, would it be all right to be able to take from that 403B? I am 51 years of age, and how can I help me and my mother restore our credit and be able to pay our bills?
Okay.
And yet be able to save at the same time.
Let me ask a couple questions.
Yes.
Do you own a home?
Yes, my mother owns her home.
And what's the value of the home?
What's the value of the home, mother? About $60,000.
And what do you owe on it?
Nothing.
Okay, perfect.
We're paying.
Perfect, 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 perfect. You're just paying taxes and insurance on it. How much do you owe in credit card debt?
Between both of us?
Yeah.
Over $40,000.
Mm. And what is the approximate income into the household now? Not when it was with your father alive, when your father was alive, but now what's the approximate income into the household from Social Security, pensions, and your job?
Probably $2,600 a month.
Okay.
So, maybe three.
Okay, so approximately $36,000 a year. How much money is in your 403B?
It's over $7,000.
$7,000?
Yep.
Okay. I want you to go see a bankruptcy attorney. That's what I'd like. I would like you to go see a bankruptcy attorney. The taking the money out of the 403B is not going to make a dent in this.
A year from now, you'll be in the same exact situation, and
you'll be wondering what to do. So the fact that your home is paid for is great. I mean, that is great. And I assume your mother is receiving some Social Security benefit. Yes. What you need to do is to see if you can discharge this debt legally, or at least reduce the principal amount that you own legally. And don't worry about what it does to your credit. You shouldn't be using any credit. The reality is your home is paid for. Mom's home is paid for. And the need for credit is minimized. So you need to go visit a bankruptcy attorney as soon as possible. All righty?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just,
There's no other way to attack this. So appreciate the call.
Yeah. And that's kind of a tough situation there. 1-888-2-HANSEN to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We're talking with Deborah in Northern California. Deborah, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes. Thanks for joining us.
I bought my house 30 years ago as a starter and never kind of moved along, and I'm finally ready to sell it mm-hmm. for a larger home. And my realtor estimates that when I sell it, I'll make about $300,000 more than I paid for it.
Okay.
Which is $50,000 more than the untaxed limit.
Yes,
maybe.
Do I need to pay taxes on that if I turn around and buy a more expensive home? And if I do have to pay taxes, can I charge, like, the landscaping I'm doing and the updates in the house and painting and the builder's fee against that $50,000?
So I assume you're single.
Yes.
And you've been single for the last few years?
Yes.
Okay. So for the rest of the listeners, is like, why would?
Sorry.
So for the rest of the listeners, we're like, how did you know she was single? Well, she referenced the tax code, which is there's $250,000 that is exempt from taxes in the sale of a primary residence for an individual and $500,000 for a couple.
When working with your realtor, did you factor in any other improvements you've done over the years?
You've lived in this house for 30 years. Have you done
not maintenance stuff, but improvements?
Have you remodeled the bathroom, or do you still have the lime green?
Yeah, and the avocado
and the avocado yeah. counter.
No, it was always beige, but I did put in granite countertops and redo light fixtures in the bathrooms. I've put a new roof on. I put in new heating and air conditioning a couple years ago.
There you go.
I'm putting in new appliances.
Did you factor those things in?
They are part of your basis, which
means your tax basis, what you've paid for the house originally, plus improvements.
So, Deborah, 30 years
does
in this
painting
house.
Does painting the house count as an improvement?
I don't know. I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Fixtures certainly do.
Fixtures do.
Any remodel?
New granite countertops?
And painting may or may not. I'm not sure.
You know, Deborah, I wouldn't worry about it.
What do you mean you wouldn't worry about it?
I think she's got $50,000.
You probably do.
In basis,
and not only that, then secondly, it's what your cost you incur in selling the homes, selling the house, and that does include things, little fix ups at the last minute.
Yes,
having a landscape fresh
and
plants put in, and
minus
that sort of stuff.
The commission that you paid to the realtor.
Oh, great!
So when you factor I'm thinking $50,000. When you factor in the cost of sale, you've got.
She's lived there for 30 years. You can't find $50,000 of improvements in 30 years?
New air conditioning, roof.
I wouldn't worry about it.
Well, you've got to put it on the tax form.
Oh, your basis?
Yeah, what your basis is.
I wouldn't worry about it.
I mean, in other words, you think over 30 years she's put $50,000.
Yeah, I'm not saying I'm ignoring tax law, flippantly ignoring tax law. What I'm saying is it would be
What's the home worth?
It's worth about $390,000, and I paid $91,500.
So you're going to have real estate expenses.
Yeah, you're going to pay at least
half of that, $25,000 or so, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's that, and clearly you've got $25,000 of expenditures.
Again,
and it doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, the question of if you buy another house, can you?
It doesn't matter.
You can't do that with a personal residence. If it's a investment property, you can do an exchange, one piece of property for another. And carry forward your cost basis and avoid taxes.
And
you can't on a personal residence.
If you move to a county, you could carry. So, for the rest of the listeners, the state of California, Prop 13 if it's in the same...
Less value.
Is it less value?
Yeah, it's the same or lesser value. Over age 55, a one-time exemption.
Cool. Thank you,
but
Scott.
But Deborah wants to move to a nicer, a bigger home. Is that right?
Is it less expensive, Deborah, or more expensive, the home you're
more expensive.
Okay.
Yeah. Your property taxes are going to
take a whack. At this stage of your life, you're moving up.
Because I have two bedrooms, and there's no spare room, and my sister moved out of state, and now when she comes, she has to sleep on the floor.
Oh, it's your sister. Come on. I have three extra rooms, and I make my relatives sleep on the floor. You know why? I can.
You're sleeping there.
You're sleeping there. But that's a
it's
bed.
A blow-up mattress, and we don't know. We can't inflate it, so just keep quiet.
Isn't that a bed? Yeah, that's a bed. Anyway, don't worry about it. You're all good.
Okay.
Glad you called, and good luck on it. You know, Pat, what? How come we can't have a better, like, okay. I would like to have in my house a very comfortable type of mattress for guests that doesn't weigh the thing of a mattress and not one of those silly blow-up things.
We use a blow-up thing. We have one at home.
Have you slept on a blow-up mattress?
I have not slept on a blow-up thing.
Terrible.
Are they?
Oh, my gosh.
So you mean like some sort of a hybrid mattress slash blow-up thing? Like now you could buy a mattress, they ship it in a little box and it expands like,
Can you
like a
can
sponge? You, like you, boom, it's out. Why can't you put?
You gotta be careful when you're opening the box.
I know. Like, why can't you put the mattress back in the box for your guests?
Maybe that's the plan.
Yeah.
There we go. Business opportunity out there for
that's
the
yours.
Listeners. There
you if go. We see you on The Prophet, which by the way, one
What's
of my
prophet?
Favorite shows with Marcus Lemonis, The Prophet. These business owners
Who's
call
Marcus
him
Marcus Lemonis.
Marcus Lemonis, he's one of the great small businessman consultants in America. You don't watch The Prophet?
I don't.
I watch The Prophet with my children, and we then talk about these businesses. And what
Is
happens
it kind of like Shark Tank?
Well, except he comes into a small business. He buys an interest in the business. Normally, they're failing
really?
Businesses. He's the one to start a camper world from scratch.
What's camper world?
It's where you buy RV. Oh, do you ever get out of the house?
I don't go to Camper World, I tell you
You've
that
You've never
much.
Been to a Camper World? How
never.
About a Bass Pro Shop? Have you been to a Bass Pro Shop?
No.
Okay.
I've been to Dick's Sporting Goods.
Oh, good for you. So, anyway, The Prophet.
REI. I've been to REI. I like REI.
You're an REI kind of guy.
1-888-2 Hanson.
You've never been to a Camping World.
What is Camping World?
They sell RV accessories.
I don't. Why would I want an RV? Why do I need RV accessories? I don't own an RV. And I have no desire to have an RV.
Bass Pro Shop.
Zero desire to have an RV.
Just go to the next time you're driving by.
I don't know how people can live in such tight quarters 24/7.
I like it. My wife and I have been shopping for an RV. I'm about that age.
All right. Anyway, all right. We're way off topic. 1-888-2 Hanson is the number to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We are in Denver talking with Cole. Cole, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Cole.
So I've got about $200,000 in equity in my house, and I was wondering if I should be trying to invest that.
So
what did you pay for the home?
$400,000.
And when did you buy the home?
About 3.5 years ago.
And how did you get $200,000 in equity in the house?
Well, we're in the Denver market.
Yeah.
Yes?
It's about 20%.
Yeah. How much money did you put down?
Not that much. We're in a 15-year loan. We've got $320,000 left on the loan.
How old are you today?
I'm 44.
Do you ever hear any ads from companies that are promoting something, and you hear the ad and you think, doggone it, I know they're promoting that, but I don't think it's really good for consumers. I don't think that's really a good thing for people. That's how I feel every time I hear a mortgage company talking about unleashing the equity in your home, or I hear people talking about this, you know, that's it's just sitting there. It's not doing anything for you, this equity. I honestly get angry when I hear that. And the reason I get angry is, look, last week we had a woman call our program, had lived in the same house for years and was upside down on it. And she's just retired. She's upside down and she shouldn't have retired.
And we told her she had to go back to work.
We see people that have been in the same home 35 years that can't retire, have no financial security because they have this huge mortgage payment each month because they continue to refinance, listening to the mortgage companies.
So if you were to take this equity out of the house and you were to invest it.
You wouldn't really take the equity. What you're doing is pledging your home as collateral in exchange for a personal loan. That's really what it is.
And what you're then doing is you're actually moving up, presumably you'd be moving up the risk scale, which is I'm borrowing at 3.25%. And then I'm taking that money and I'm investing. And let's say that you bought the S&P 500, the Standard & Poor's 500. And some years you will just knock it out of the park. Absolutely knock it out of the park.
This year, last year.
Some years you will lose your shirt. But in that 15 years, you'd probably end up ahead.
Probably would, yes. Assuming you stayed the course, yes.
I think
a very high probability if you took some refinance, took money out, invested in the S&P 500 index fund and ignored it 15 years from now, you'd probably be ahead.
High probability. Not guaranteed, but high probability.
But you might not.
But you may not. What we do know is if you make these payments for the next 15 years, you'll be 59 years of age, and it's so much easier to retire when your home is paid for. So,
I see.
Where else do you have money? Do you have money in your 401k or IRAs or anything like that?
Yeah, I've me and my wife have 401ks. There's about 50 to 60,000 in each one of those right now.
And how are they allocated? Is it stocks or bonds?
They're in mutual funds in the Ramsey 4 mutual fund.
Okay. And you have kids at home?
No.
Well, you mentioned Ramsey mutual fund. He's a big believer in your home.
Ramsey 4. He just recommends 4 different mutual funds.
Oh, Dave Ramsey. But Dave Ramsey also recommends having your home paid off.
Correct.
So we agree with Dave.
I don't know what his mutual funds. I don't even know if you need 4 of them. You should be 100% equities or stocks with those dollars. You should have no bonds in there. You should have 70 to 80% of U.S. stocks.
Given your age, you've got a long time.
And the rest should be international, and they should be low cost ETF, exchange traded funds, or index funds for the bulk of it.
And I like the fact that you've got this 15-year mortgage.
I think it's great.
And I wouldn't even bother worrying about getting that paid off until you've maximized your retirement contributions, maximized any saving for kids' college, assuming you have kids in the house, that sort of thing.
Maximize your Roth contributions or IRA contribution, then start paying down the mortgage, but not until you do all that. So you should increase your 401k contribution, you and your wife, right now. And you should increase it by at least 2% every 6 months until you're at the maximum. All righty?
Okay, well, that brings up a question. So I have 10% going into a Roth IRA, and my wife has 10% going into a traditional, a Roth
401k. What's your family income? So you're splitting it down the middle, essentially. What's your family income?
Yeah, 180. So we both make about 90,000.
Yeah, you're saving way too little money.
Well, we were trying to pay the house off and some credit card bills, so we just finished off paying our credit card bills. Going to increase our allocation there. But my Roth 401k, and she has a traditional 401k, should I increase?
Here's what I would do. I'd stop the Roth contributions on this, and I'd move it to a deductible contribution, and I would increase it to 15%, and you won't notice any difference in your take-home pay.
And the reason, I think the reason is the tax rate you're at now. And your income level, you're pretty high. You know, if you look at percentage of America, you're the top 10%, maybe top 5% of income. So you're already at a pretty high tax rate, federal tax rate. We kind of questioned, does it make sense to take a Roth, to use the Roth today?
It doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, well, okay, that's fine. Well, it might. Who knows? It's down the road.
All
we'll
right. Would you be?
No.
Okay. So the answer to your question is increase your...
I do deductible 401k.
Increase personal. Both of your 401ks to deductible. Quit using the Roth option, move it to 15%, go 100% equity, and you won't notice any difference in your take-home pay. Turn around and then start making a contribution into your IRAs. Don't worry about paying this home off. I disagree with Dave Ramsey sometimes about paying the homes off. I like his show overall. I think getting people out of debt is the greatest thing ever. But at certain levels, I don't think it's as simple as this or that. But in your situation, keep the home the same, save.
Yep.
All righty?
Okay.
Good luck, Cole. Thanks. Sounds like you guys are on the right track. So
appreciate the call.
And Pat, I totally agree with you when you said it's not as simple as that, because every situation is unique. Matter of fact, last night I was talking to a couple other financial advisors,
at dinner.
Sounds like a great time.
Oh, phenomenal. You get a bunch of
good
suits
times.
Together.
Woo!
Yeah, a bunch of financial. But we're talking about the concept of...
Wake the kids, call the neighbors.
Having... we're talking about the concept of having your home paid off at retirement.
Okay.
Right? And we're sitting there talking, and I said, look, I said, our philosophy, Hans McLean, we believe that for the vast majority of the time, people are better off hitting retirement when their home's paid off. I said, not always. Sometimes there's a situation where it makes sense to have a mortgage or someone's comfortable with it. They got other assets, and so they have a mortgage. So it's not black and white, but the majority of the time, and they had the exact same agreement with us, actually, as people were talking about. I said, and I think most financial advisors would state the same. It's hard to say mortgage is always bad.
Sometimes they're good.
Right?
Yeah.
They're not always bad.
That's correct.
So sometimes it makes sense to have a mortgage.
It depends on what stage in life you are. Depends on where the market cycle in residential houses are. Sometimes it's better to rent than it is to own.
Assuming you can predict the housing cycles.
That is correct.
But you can't. No more than you can predict the stock market
you
cycles.
You can do a calculation that determines
you
whether
you can determine
it's
if things are cheap or expensive relative to other periods of time.
And whether it makes more sense to rent for a period of time than to own. But yes, you cannot predict the highs and lows of any asset class.
No.
Because large groups of emotions are driving those prices. Yeah.
And if there's
the time.
Although, clearly there would be times when you could say, this price is ridiculous. And I think back to the tulip mania,
mm-hmm.
which everyone's so familiar with.
Yes. Why do we still make reference to this?
That's, as I'm starting to talk about this back in the studio, do you guys know the tulip mania in Holland?
No. Okay, how about the Beanie Baby mania?
Okay,
now we shake. So these are younger people than we are. So they understand. We're going to go to something recent.
Jasmine still has the Beanie Baby collection.
She does. Do you have Beanie Babies?
By the way,
she does.
The tulip craze was in Holland in the
1600s, I believe.
And
all of a sudden, the prices went.
A tulip was worth more than.
Like Bitcoin. It went crazy. And for no apparent reason.
Well, not quite compared to Bitcoin because.
Well,
don't know. Bitcoin's a prime example of something's only worth what someone else is willing to pay for it.
That is exactly it.
Yeah. And anyway, there are times when you could look at an asset class and think, this is so expensive. And for example, if you could rent a nice house for $1,000 a month,
mm-hmm.
or that house would cost you $5 million to buy.
What would you do?
I would rent. Why would I spend $5 million if I can rent it for $1,000
a month? If the house cost you $50,000 a month to rent and you could buy it for $5 million.
If you had the $5 million. Or conversely, if the house cost $50,000 or $1,000 a month to rent, it would clearly make sense to buy that house.
That is correct.
So there are times.
So asset prices.
Yeah.
So sometimes the mortgage makes sense. Sometimes it doesn't.
There is a disturbing article. It's not really the article that's disturbing. It's the practice that happens in a lot of these big Wall Street firms. And Wall Street firms, we're just talking about paying off homes and leveraging yourself, right?
Yeah, whether it makes sense or not.
So these Wall Street firms, when I say Wall Street firms, I'm talking about Morgan Stanley. I'm talking about Merrill Lynch.
Are they Wall Street firms anymore or banks?
Well, whatever. They encourage their investment clients to borrow against their securities.
Stocks, mutual funds.
Yeah. They're not
bonds.
They're not necessarily margin loans, traditional margin loans, but they're oftentimes they will.
They use them as collateral.
To buy a second house.
So you pledge. Let's say you have a portfolio outside of an IRA of stocks, bonds, mutual funds, exchange traded funds. What have you, U.S. treasuries, or even cash. They'll come to you and say, hey, why don't you borrow this? You don't have to go through any of that paperwork with your house or any of that stuff.
You've got all this money with
you. You got this money. We're just going to pledge this as collateral, and we're going to lend you the money. And Scott, why is this a bad idea?
Because your financial advisor there receives some sort of compensation based upon you doing this. So it's tied, and some have a requirement.
So it may make sense, but once again, it creates this conflict between you and the person that you're relying on for financial advice.
Morgan Stanley just had settled $1 million settlement with regulators this last April. They didn't admit to do anything, but it was over this practice.
Yeah.
It's oftentimes part of a bonus structure for advice. So you've got this financial advisor you think is on your side. They want to be on your side, but they also have a financial incentive. If they put you into debt, they get paid more.
Yes.
I think it's deplorable that these firms have this practice. There should be a wall between the financial advisor and these sort of products that the bank's pushing.
Instead, they
incentivize the financial advisor. You might have a great advisor at that big firm.
He might be the best person you have ever met, or I have ever met. Or according to the commercials, you're going to have him to your daughter's wedding.
But they're operating under this environment where they have a tremendous financial incentive, and what they might recommend to you might not be in your best interest. It's
in the firm's best interest, yeah, and maybe the advisor's best interest.
Anyway, we need to take a quick break. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to join the program. 1-888-2-HANSON. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
And thanks for being part of the program. 1-888-2-HANSON, of course, to join the show. And by the way,
how about our website?
We think in the same way. I was about to say that.
Look at that.
We like to promote ourselves a little bit every once in a while. Just, you know.
Because why not? It's our radio show.
Well, frankly, we're quite proud of our organization and our advisors and whatnot. But no, we're also proud of our website because we've got a great resource library on our website of information. We have our newsletter that goes out every Friday afternoon that's got great information that can help you with your
retirement plan. Where would I find this website?
HansonMcLean.com.
And while you're there, go ahead, sign up for the weekly email. We send 20,000 a weekend, or a bunch. We send a bunch. And adding your name to the list costs us nothing. Absolutely zero.
It costs you nothing.
But
the information you receive is invaluable.
Maybe, maybe not. But you subscribe. You say, I don't like this. You just go on to the email and you unsubscribe. It's that easy.
Is that how it works, Pat?
Yes.
If you don't like it, you just unsubscribe.
You just unsubscribe.
Or you just hit delete.
Well, don't
you? Or you block the sender.
Yeah. Well, there's lots of ways not to interact with us.
We make it easy to unsubscribe. I've always frustrated at those spam stuff you get, and there's no way to, or you hit it, and then once you enter your email, and you're like,
you know my email.
You just sent it to me.
Yeah. But we don't do that.
Are you sure? There's also some of those.
Are you sure? No.
Makes you update your preferences. I have no preference.
We're going to miss you is my
favorite.
Lack
of preference.
We're going to miss you. Are you really? If I unsubscribe to your email, are you really going to miss me?
Pat McLean unsubscribed.
All for the office.
Yeah, Pat McLean unsubscribed.
And they're, you know, you're back at the corporate office and everyone's all like somber. What happened?
Pat McLean unsubscribed.
We miss him.
We miss Pat.
So, HansonMcLean.com. Sign up for the weekly email. Or don't.
Or don't. And you can, anyway.
It's easy.
Yeah. We do have, but as an example, we had an article on should you focus on your retirement savings or paying down your mortgage?
And this got a lot of people actually read this article. How do we know? We have a website. We look at the numbers. And then we write more articles.
And we see if you're the one reading the article. Pat McLean read the article.
The other thing that did was three must-dos.
Really.
Three things you should do for a retirement transition.
Anyway, a lot of good stuff on there. So,
there you go.
Before we go back,
and you could actually subscribe to our podcast.
There's a change that's happening in housing in the United States.
Not just prices going up.
No. I think there's a shift underway. It's been underway, and if we look at home ownership rates they've declined, and they're really not inching up that much. So,
as a percentage of the population.
And the real estate industry might state that the American dream is owning your own home. I think more of the American dream is the beauty of this country is people have, it's a land of opportunity. And you can create your own life regardless of where you came from. There's not a caste system here.
There is a caste system.
Right? And it's not that if you were born a pauper, you're going to remain a pauper. If your father was a cobbler, you are a cobbler as well. It's that, I think, is the American dream, is accomplishing what you want to accomplish and everything that you're created to do, right? Not
just financially.
Not just financially, by any means.
But spiritually.
Whatever,
emotionally.
Right? I'm trying to get deep
the
here.
Emotional American dream.
Anyway. But I think so there's younger people. We talk to younger people that some of them have no interest in owning a home.
Yes, not at all.
So, look, 30 years ago, you went to work for a big company.
I did. Went to work for a big company, bought a home a year and a half later.
You went to, and you weren't happy at the big company.
Yeah, I hated it.
Okay, but
absolutely hated it. One of the worst jobs I ever had. But, in fact, the day I quit, they said, you can't quit. We were going to promote you. I said, no, I'm out.
Is that what they said?
Yeah.
That's hilarious. All right. So, but it was a different era, right? If you look at how many careers someone has today, how many different jobs one has, and even like millennials view it a little differently.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily think, oh, I got this job at this great company now. I don't have to worry about anything because I've got this job.
They know there isn't security in most positions.
And I don't know if they look at it that way. They have security in themselves, security in what they can bring to the marketplace. So you talk to younger people and they think, well, yeah, I've got this job now. It's great. And I'm living here, which is fine. But
I might not be there in a year from now. I could be living in Chicago. I could be living in Detroit. I could be living in Boca Raton.
And the one thing about home ownership that isn't discussed much is that it can prevent people from seeking better employment.
And it can actually slow the economy because it doesn't allow for people to easily move geography for opportunity.
That's right. So we're seeing some people who could otherwise buy a house, and a couple generation ago, they clearly would have bought a house, and now they're saying, you know, I don't know if I really want to own a house. And at the same time, we're seeing this happen. We're seeing Wall Street and big firms become large landlords, owners of homes.
They historically have been landlords, but not for single family residents.
For multiple, for apartments.
Wall Street has historically been involved in apartments.
When we say Wall Street, we're talking about
big
companies, really.
Yeah.
Big finance companies.
Yeah. And so now we're seeing it with institutional landlords, where they've taken the same approach that they've taken to apartments over the years and said, I'm going to take it to the neighborhood. I'm going to bring it to Fairfield, California. And in Fairfield, California, we're going to buy 600 homes.
Yep.
And I'm going to rent them out. And I'm going to put in the infrastructure to act as a landlord. I'm going to put property managers in there. I'm going to have a couple people on payroll that go out and do the repairs. What causes this? One is there's a need for it. The marketplace is there. The second is, it's a reach for yield for these large companies. What that means is they're trying to get a consistent cash flow based on ownership of an asset. Why? Well, because interest rates have remained so low for so long that Wall Street firms, big institutions are changing their view of how to create that consistent cash flow.
I mean, there's publicly traded companies that are in this. American Homes for Rent, publicly traded company. That's what they do.
They are what you would call a non-traditional traded REIT.
But we are seeing, you're seeing more and more of this. I find it quite fascinating. And
it will change the way.
It will have implications for us all.
Yeah, it'll change.
Whether that's good or bad, I'm not sure yet at this point.
Well, it's got
but if you live in a neighborhood and 10% of your homes were all owned by one
landlord?
Yeah. I don't know if I would. I don't know if I would like that.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Because they could, if they wanted to sell at the same time, then some downward pressure.
I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing.
It's better than the.
You know what I would like to see?
It's better than the unkept house down the street where there's cars parked on the lawn.
Yeah. Yes. Assuming that you don't want a neighbor with cars parked on their lawn.
And if you're one with cars parked on the lawn, well,
come on.
Yeah.
What a neighbor's a favor. Scott, you know what I would like to see is how mortgages are actually distributed. I think it's kind of crazy.
What do you mean?
Just the complexity and cost associated with getting a mortgage.
It's because the government's involved. It's because the government backs it on all. Truly.
Most mortgages.
If the government was not involved in the mortgage, if the government said, federal government, Congress, Donald Trump's going to make America great by having the government get out of the mortgage business. Let's just
assume. When does this start? So,
he meant great entertainment.
We cannot rip on Donald Trump.
Everyone can.
I don't necessarily like or dislike. Yeah, well, I'm not going to comment on it. But your point's well taken. That if the private sector was exclusively in the mortgage industry.
No government.
No government. Wasn't an alternative. That the delivery of the mortgages themselves would become more efficient.
And you would see mortgages not based on the house primarily, but on the individual.
On the individual. And.
Why not swap collateral?
And.
For a fee.
And?
If I wanted to move, why not just keep the same mortgage and swap collateral?
And you'd actually see the use of life insurance involved in it in order to protect the lender.
You probably would see more of that too.
Right?
Anyway.
That's interesting. I never thought of it like that, Scott. Well thank you for the enlightenment.
Those are the kinds of things I think about at 3 in the morning. It's like, what if the government stepped out of lending?
Right. And that is why you're so fascinating to hang around.
Yes, because like, we have those kind of conversations.
It's incredible.
Yeah, people talk about like the latest sports thing, and I just interject. Have you pondered what would happen if Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac didn't exist?
And hence,
yes,
both of your friends say, I've got
to
go.
All right, we needed to take this call. 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number to be part of Hanson McLean. What's the numeric?
I don't know.
I don't know the number. 1-888-242-6766.
There we go.
There it is. All right. Let's be in Sacramento and talk with Dennis. Dennis, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yeah, good morning. My question is, how can some of the mutual funds justify such high turnover rates? I mean, some of them have 50 to 100 or even more than 100% turnover. Are they churning for fees or are they just impatient? Warren Buffett wouldn't invest that way.
Well, all right, so great question. So, first of all, a mutual fund manager, this individual has they're trying to accomplish some objective, right? So we're talking about actively managed mutual funds here. Right. And I suppose you could go out, Dennis, and you look at, all right, let's look over some managers the last 20 years. Who's been a good, is there anyone who's beaten the S&P 500? Very few. And then if someone chooses for an active manager, somebody who's active, they are paying a fee in the hopes that that manager is going to be able to outperform some underlying index. They're looking for a return after expenses higher than the return they would get if they just bought a passive fund.
And my feeling on this is that what an actively managed fund where you see a lot of turnover, they're not buy and hold investors. Obviously, what they're looking for is perceived price discrepancies in the market or inefficiencies in a pricing of a particular stock or bond. So that is why
they
would trade.
But your question is, how could they justify it? You know,
well, the market does.
Yeah. I mean, so as an investor, retail investor, we vote with our pocketbook, right? So, I mean, someone could say, hey, I'm going to charge you 2% a year and I'll do 1,000% turnover. And if there's investors willing to pay for it,
then that's how they justify it. If it wasn't justifiable, then they wouldn't exist.
Whether or not you believe it's a good strategy, that's another story.
Or Warren Buffett believes it's a good strategy. It doesn't matter.
It's the market that determines whether it's
justifiable.
And
if there's investors willing to pay for it, then
God bless them.
But look, most of our portfolio is index funds, but the majority passive investment, because if you just look at the studies, it's, you know, there are some academics that will their strong argument is that any excess return is pure luck. And even if you look at a manager who's outperformed the indexes over the last 20 years, maybe that's pure luck.
Maybe.
You get 100 people in a room saying, we want everyone to flip a coin, and we want to see who can flip heads the most times in a row.
Someone's going to outperform
everyone
else.
And we can cheer that person. Wow, look at this guy got 32 times in a row.
Nothing to do with it.
And yay, we celebrate him and give him a big raise. Maybe that's what's happening in active management.
Yes.
It could be.
We don't know.
So, but look, in the investment world, it's just like any other marketplace. You have a choice as an investor. I can choose to buy on things on Amazon, and or I can choose to go into retail stores. I can choose to go into high expensive retail stores. I mean, I was talking to a guy a couple months ago. He does women's fashion, high-end women's fashion.
What do you mean? He wears it or he does it? What do you mean?
His business. He's the CEO of a company.
Okay.
High-end women's fashion. And we were talking. I said, you know what baffles me? I don't understand luxury brands. Like, why someone would pay $5,000 for a purse? We'll talk about that.
Yeah, what did he say?
Well, he actually did say, well, the more expensive, actually, the more cost that goes into it. I'm kind of looking at it.
Come on.
Yeah, the cost is all in the spin and the creating this. It's in the branding and the marketing.
Yeah, it's like wine. What's the difference? You know, does a $250 bottle of wine cost 10 times as much to make as a $25 bottle of wine? I'm guessing not.
Not 10 times.
Not 10 times.
No, of course
I'm
not.
Sure it costs more, but not 10 times.
That's, okay, that's fine. So, but, you know, look, in the marketplace, you can choose. And some people think that is absolutely absurd. Why in the world would anyone spend $5,000 on a handbag? Which I would think, personally. But there are some that want to buy it.
Or that wouldn't
exist. It's the same thing in the investment world. Look, there's some funds out there, triple leveraged ETF funds, I think are garbage.
But the SEC was trying to get rid of them. It's none of their business. I wouldn't buy one. I don't think that they're good for the investors. But it's not the SEC's job to determine.
Well, I don't know. There's a different whose job it is or not.
Well, obviously, that they're fighting about that now, about the DOL.
Where's government's role falling on?
Well, but even the Department of Labor rules, the fiduciary standard, now all of a sudden they're fighting over who's going to actually run it. The SEC's like, well, maybe it should be us. You're like, come on, you're late to the dance here, guys.
Anyway, unfortunately, we're not going to have time to take the rest of these calls because we are now going to move to our real advice segment of the program. And during this segment of our program, we talk with a financial advisor of Hanson McLean, of which we've got roughly 20 or so advisors. And we talk with them about a real life experience that they've had with an individual who's contacted our organization. And today we've got
Scott, we got to do the disclosure. This may or may not reflect your experience with Hanson McLean. Please see fine print for details.
We've got a 48-page disclosure booklet, if you'd like.
Essentially, compliance department says, look, you can tell the story, but you got to remind everyone that they may not or they may be super happy here at Hanson McLean.
So we've got Keith Johnson today, and Keith is one of our Denver-based advisors. He's got over 20 years of experience in financial services. He's a certified financial planner, and he meets with clients throughout the greater Denver metro area. Keith, welcome to our program.
Gentlemen, thank you. How are you?
We could not be much better. So tell us about a situation that you've encountered.
Okay, met with someone recently. Actually, it was kind of an unfortunate situation. His wife had passed away about 10 years ago. He was 53 at the time. Ended up inheriting her 401k and had absolutely no idea what to do with it. So he reached out to some of his friends. Someone suggested that he meet with an advisor. And then, long story short, this advisor recommended that he roll his wife's 401k into an IRA in his name,
mm-hmm.
and then purchase a variable annuity.
Inside of that.
So,
correct.
Was that designed for, was there guaranteed income on that, or what was the point of the variable annuity?
There was guaranteed income on it. He did purchase a rider for that guaranteed income, so that comes with an expense, obviously. But going through this whole process, I think more importantly, he was never really comfortable with the decision he made a decade ago.
Well, can we break this down? There were two things that probably, or three things that I could think of that took place. Mm-hmm. One, that if he had left the IRA in his wife's name, there'd be no penalties to get at those dollars.
If he needed them for some reason.
So there was no benefit in actually rolling it into your own IRA. The investment options could have been absolutely
identical.
Unless
the insurance company wouldn't do a beneficiary IRA.
How often does that happen?
I don't know.
But, okay.
So anyway,
that was number one.
Here was when we did talk about that. He ended up taking money out of this annuity. So we went into, and that was discouraging to hear that someone in the industry is, you know, kind of self-serving, looking out for themselves.
No way. Or just didn't understand the benefit of actually leaving it in the decedent IRA. Right. After age 59 and a half, had he been over the age of 59 and a half and she passed away, it would have been absolutely fine to put the money in the IRA. And that way you could have avoided the 10% federal penalty.
Whether or not the annuity made sense, I don't know.
Yes. So
what did you end up doing? How did you clean this up?
Well, I took a look at the prospectus just to do my due diligence, and that goes into all the detail about the product, obviously, and determined that beyond just the performance was not there over the last 10 years, that was also a concern for him. Total fees he was paying, 3.4%.
Oh, that's going to hurt. That is large. Man.
That's why the performance hasn't been there. You got 3.4% drag. Was there surrender charges to get out of it?
Well, here's the thing. It was just coming out of surrender, so they could access
10 years?
The annuity. So it was a 9-year surrender. Huh. So it was just coming out.
Most marriages don't last that long.
That's true.
Can you imagine? You get married by an annuity, you get an annuity for what? You get, boom. Which ends first?
That was.
So at any rate, he can get out of this for no penalty. And then out of the blue, this advisor who he hadn't heard from for more than 5 years, literally, calls him and says he wants to meet up to talk about his investment. So that was another.
So here's what happened. Sold the product a decade ago, 9 years ago, received a commission.
Big fat commission.
Put something on
his. Bought a Camaro.
Put something in his contact management system, whatever tickler system he uses, to remind him that in 9 years down the road,
you could go back to the well
and sell that individual something else.
That's exactly the case. And I think I've heard some agents or insurance agents say, how do they coin it, that your annuity has matured.
Yes, there's no maturity.
Annuities don't mature. If you have someone call you up and tell you your maturity, your annuity has matured, run away. In fact, if you have someone pitching an annuity,
run away.
Probably run away.
So what did you end up, what were you able to get out of this then?
Well, he didn't meet with his advisor. So that after our conversation,
wasn't an advisor.
It was a salesman.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, you're right. Yeah, sales. He didn't meet with the salesperson.
Were you able to get the money out of that contract?
That's in process right now.
Without penalty, without a cost associated, no taxes, and no extra fees to the advisor or the insurance company.
No, it's going IRA to IRA, no taxes.
And just in an IRA, which got flexibility. Well, anyway, appreciate it.
Keith, if you, Keith is in our Denver office, and I'm sure many of you listening have met with Keith. Good guy. Appreciate you being at Hanson McLean.
Thanks, Keith. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. And thanks for taking the time to be part with us today. So glad you joined us. Hey, you know, Pat, we bash annuities a lot.
Yeah.
It's not because all annuities are bad.
There are rare circumstances where an annuity makes sense. Rare. The problem is
how they're used.
And the average consumer can't tell good from bad.
We also bash whole life insurance. We bash universal life insurance. It doesn't mean that there's never a time for those.
It just means that there's so much bad stuff out there.
And there's so much misuse.
Yeah, there's so much use that the average consumer can't tell good from bad. So if you can't tell good from bad, if the average consumer, you're probably just all better off staying away from it.
Seriously?
Yes.
Because they're...
Yeah. I own a variable universal life policy.
As do I.
And you say, well, why do you bash variable universal life policies? Because so many times I've seen just destruction about how it's used.
Bad. You don't use it. Well, you're not putting money on a monthly basis.
For college funding.
Correct. Right?
You're not using it as a retirement savings vehicle until you've put the money in your 401k, in your IRA, and you've gotten yourself out of debt and X, Y, Z.
Our biggest issue
with annuities
is how they're sold. And oftentimes some broker gets an upfront commission. That's exactly what we just heard from here. This person had no interest in helping this guy plan for his financial future.
None. And actually,
sold him a product, had something to remind him that 9 years down the road, the money could be a plague again, so he can sell him something again.
And gave poor investment advice, but planning advice.
Look, you work with a financial advisor that's fee-based. The benefit there is you can fire that person anytime. You're not paying a big upfront commission to invest in some products. That advisor has to work for you every day, every month, every year to keep your business, and you could always leave. They've got a financial incentive to make sure you're on track with your goals, a financial incentive to make sure that you're making money, not losing, financial incentive to keep costs down.
They've got all,
as opposed to selling you some financial product to then just wait 9 years to sell you some others.
Yeah, not only sell you a financial product, phenomenally expensive financial product.
Yeah. Anyway, we are running out of time. We are here every weekend at this same time. And if you're not a podcast subscriber to this, I would recommend that you do so. If you ever listen to podcasts, if you don't. By the way, if you aren't clear how to even download a podcast, we've got a quick video on our website to show you how to do it. So if you're like, maybe Hanson McLean will be the first podcast I listen to, great. Anyway, go to HansonMcLean.com. And while you're there, check out. There's a lot of great other information. And if you're listening to this and think, you know, I could probably benefit with meeting with a financial advisor, reach out to us. We'd be happy to have a consultation with you and see if we can help you as well. HansonMcLean.com is the website. We're out of time. You've been listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.